Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back. Total Information AM on KMOX at 836 with Debbie Monterey. I'm Tom Ackerman. A new ant is sparking concern among New Yorkers, the Manhattant. Did I say that right?
See what you did there?
It was the first one spotted in the city nearly a decade ago, and it's quickly becoming the most common. Could that relatively recently discovered ant continue to spread into other areas of the country? Why are scientists concerned with that spread? Locally, several researchers are hoping the public can get involved with a study of local ants and beetles and mosquitoes. And joining us, Victoria Brown Kennerly, Webster University Associate Professor and ant expert, Missouri Botanical Garden entomologist Tad Yankoski, and entho-botanist Allison Joyce from the Garden's Earthways Center. We've got a full studio of people, and it's great to have you all here on KMOX. How are you?
Doing good.
Good. Let's talk about the ants in New York. So what are they for any of you to start there, and how do they spread so far so fast?
So the ant that's famously popping up all over New York City is a species from Europe. Unfortunately, ants can be very easily spread by human means. You know, it could be as simple as a small plant with a little bit of soil, and there's a few ants that hitchhike a ride in there. We don't know it until it's too late, and they've spread to our ecosystems and become established. And that's most likely what happened in New York City. Could have been from a shipping container, could have been from plants, but they're there and they're spreading and are sort of taking over the city.
This does happen with other insects as well, but is there more concern about this particular ant? And if so, why?
Ants in general are ecosystem engineers. They are very good at changing the world around them. They move lots of soil, which when they're doing their, you know, roles in their native habitat is great. They aerate the soil, they move nutrients, they control pests, or they protect plants. But at the same time, if they end up in an area where they're not supposed to be, they could have wide-ranging negative impacts as well.
Victoria,
yes.
How many kinds of ants are there? And what do they tell? Ants are fascinating. What do they tell us about our world?
There are tens of thousands of types of ants. I mean, it depends on which geographic region. Globally, their biomass exceeds the human biomass on the planet. And so they're the relationship between ants and plants and insects and soil, these are foundational. They've evolved over millions of years, and they're really just intricately associated with life on this earth. We need healthy soils. We need healthy plants. We need the insects and ants, mosquitoes, beetles, plants to work together to really create a healthy atmosphere and a healthy environment for all the other life forms.
Allison, I'm sure insects are extremely important at the Botanical Garden. First of all, what exactly is an ethnobotanist?
Oh, great question. An ethnobotanist is somebody who studies the relationship between people and plants. So it could be an indigenous community, or it could be something as simple as the materials that make your clothes or the paper that you write on. All of our lives are intertwined in nature in ways that we don't think about. So that's what ethnobotanists are interested in.
I understand that we are working on a project studying biodiversity in bugs in St. Louis. Tell us about that.
Yes, we are part of the Citizen DNA Barcoding Project, which is part of the Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory in New Jersey. And so it's a citizen science program. We go out, we collect ants, beetles, and mosquitoes. We take them back to the lab. We mash them up and actually extract their DNA. And then we do a number of lab procedures to be able to actually sequence the DNA, and then we can put it into a database and identify species. And so it allows citizen scientists who might not have professional technical training to be able to identify specific species when they're very, very small, and it's hard to identify ants, especially for me as a non-ant person. But through DNA barcoding, we can be very precise to know exactly if something is changing, like in Manhattan, in the Manhattan ant.
Is that really officially it's what we're calling it? Or was that a joke? Manhattan ant. I mean, it's catchy.
I think it's catchy, and so it sort of has caught on.
It's not the Latin name.
All right, so people listening, we were talking before in the break that, you know, kids love insects. My son loved bugs. He was always collecting them. Tom's daughter as well. And as you mentioned, Tad, some people do not grow out of that. And I'm sure they're listening right now thinking, oh my gosh, what does this ant look like? And where is it? Do we know if it's here? What are you all asking of the public and how can they get involved in this?
Oh, this program is great because anyone from an entomologist to someone who maybe is afraid of bugs can still participate and learn more about what's happening in their own backyard or in their community. The Manhattan is an ant that got very famous, but we have our own version of that right in St. Louis. We have the Japanese pavement ant, which is found in Japan and the St. Louis area and basically nowhere else in the world. And it was established here much the same way the ant in Manhattan became established about 100 years ago. It's theorized that it may have actually been brought over with plants for the World's Fair. And it got established over 100 years ago and has slowly spread across the St. Louis area and is actually taking over local communities of ants. It is driving out ants. Where it shows up, all of the other ant species disappear.
Wow, the Japanese pavement ant.
You probably have stepped right over top of it and not even noticed it before.
Maybe.
Probably so. And then at what point does it, like, you know, drop off and then another species starts? Because here in the state, both Missouri and Illinois, right, the further you go out, it changes.
Correct. So when it sort of finds a new habitat, it takes over. And from what we've seen, there are no other native species that can compete with it. Unfortunately, in areas that it prefers, when it shows up, all of the native species tend to disappear, and we've yet to see them really move back in and take a foothold back. At the butterfly house in our outdoor gardens, we did some ant diversity sampling, trying to see what was out there, because we knew we had lots of ants, and we put out about 30 traps, and we found one species of ant, the Japanese pavement ant.
Wow. Well, to that end, talking about people looking at ants. Now I'm sure everybody's going to be looking at the ground this morning in a different way, but is there a public bug hunting event coming up, and what will that entail?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked. We have our first public collection event this Saturday at Lower Merrimack County Park, and so we will be going out hunting bugs, putting them in little test tubes, and then we'll do some lab events in the winter and fall. And then next Saturday, September 21st, we'll be at Bellefontaine Cemetery doing the same thing there. So things might look the same from far away, but once we get up close and start looking closer, then we'll hopefully discover a lot more biodiversity that can support the ecosystems that support all of us.
It's so interesting. I one time was sitting out with my daughter, Audrey. We're sitting on a chair out in the back patio, and she goes, "Dad, how many ants do you think are in the yard right now?" And I'm like, I don't know. I hope there aren't a lot of mosquitoes. But I'll ask you that question. Like anybody's home or neighborhood on any given day, how many things are crawling around out there underneath that we can't see?
Well, just off the back of my hand, it depends on the soil. It depends,
obviously,
you know, but millions, right? And here's the interesting thing about this project is that we get what we look for, right? And so these biodiversity surveys are great. And when we can get the community involved, we can have them work in ecology and biodiversity and field science, but then we can also bring them into the lab and get the citizen scientists and the public interested in molecular biology, in genetics, in bioinformatics. And that's what really excites me as an educator. So I'm doing this with my genetics courses, with their laboratory sessions, and now we're bringing it to the public, and the Botanical Garden and the Butterfly House have been great partners in that.
That is Victoria Brown Kennerly. She is with Webster University. Also, Tad Yankowski, who is with the Botanical Garden and the Saks Butterfly House. He's an entomologist. And Allison Joyce, ethnobotanist with the Botanical Garden's Earthways Center. Thank you all so much for coming in, and we encourage people to attend that event on Saturday. Is there a good place to send people to get more information on the event?
Yes, biodiversecitystl.org.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.